There's something really intimate about being told a great story. You're pulled into someone else's world. You're made to feel what they're feeling. And sometimes you even kind of end up caring about them a lot. That really only happens when your story has a memorable character.
I guess if I sound like I'm disinterested today, it's firstly because I'm tired and wore ass out, and secondly because, you know, I'm not the most cheerful person. You know, I spend most spare time now either studying energy or climate change, and it's not looking good. So, yeah, sometimes it's hard for me to get focused back on something when the whole goddamned Arctic summer sea ice is going to be gone by 2017.
That is the voice of John B. McLemore, a charismatic and a complicated man, a clockmaker who lived in Woodstock, Alabama, but was so much more. It's a place that John calls S-Town, the S standing for a four-letter word among many that we cannot say on public radio. It's also the name of a podcast out right now from the creators of This American Life and of Serial. And if Serial sounds familiar to you, this intricate true crime story that brought in record numbers of listeners for a podcast, and some say defined the medium. S-Town has already broken some of those records with over 16 million downloads and counting. And as a listener, it doesn't take long before you get the sense that what you're hearing is different than what's out there in the world of podcasts, because I think there's no shortage post-Serial of podcasts that sound like a reporter's notebook. But this is also sort of a novel, like an audio novel that's full of very detailed description. But above all, no matter what genre you want to classify it into, S-Town is a story about John B. McLemore, about his town, about his community, and the mystery around him that unravels in seven chapters. Brian Reed is the host and co-producer of S-Town. He joins me from New York City. Hi, Brian.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. I'm happy to talk to you. I'm so curious because I know John reached out to you first, asking you and the This American Life, the show you work for, to investigate a murder in town. I have been a fan of This American Life for a really long time, and I can only imagine the volume of amazing story pitches that you don't even do anything with, like just the number of story pitches that come in that don't even make it to air. So at what point did you realize John's story he had called you about was worth pursuing?
Honestly, just from the first email, it seemed worthwhile in terms of at least calling him. You know, there was something in his email that was lively and just caught my attention. That even just the way it was punctuated was different than other emails. There were certain words that are capitalized, and the way the pacing of it, and then the subject line above all.
What was the subject line?
It was John B. McLemore lives in S-Town, Alabama, is the gist of what the subject line said. And I don't know, it just seemed like, man, it's worth a phone call.
But I think there was also something when I listened to it, it doesn't take long that I hear you, Brian, have a real affection for him as a person. You know, what was it that personally drew you to him?
He's one of those people that, you kind of immediately feel like you know them. You know, this is even in the story when I first went to visit John in person, you know, after talking on the phone to him for a while. You know, we'd never met, but he's not the kind of person who shakes your hand. You know, like I drove into his driveway and immediately we were off and he's like giving me a tour as if like, of course, like we're just buddies. Like, you know, he's someone who had a lot of time as well to talk and had a lot to say and a lot of thoughts on his mind. And it was funny and dark and troubled and brilliant. And it, you know, anytime I'd hear from him, either via email or on the phone, it just added a little bit of like excitement to my, you know, sometimes otherwise boring day.
I should say that the podcast in many ways is about so much more than John. Also more than just about what the themes of the show are, but you learn about antique clocks when you listen to this. You get vignettes as to what life is like in rural Alabama, in Woodstock, Alabama. You end up with something, again, that feels a lot more like a novel. And I think when I first read an interview with you, you said you approached this like a novel. The podcast made a lot more sense to me. The episodes are actually chaptered. So what did you, in making this thing, thinking about it as a novel, allow you to do that, say, you as a reporter could not do?
Oh, a lot. It was what made the whole process so challenging and enjoyable. And I should point out, it's a nonfiction novel, if that even makes sense. Is that a contradiction in terms? but, you know, it's all true and reported. But from early on, Julie Snyder, who created this with me and is also one of the co-creators of Serial, and I talked about using novelistic techniques to tell this true story. And there were a few reasons for that. I mean, the first was just the kind of metaphors that were present in the world of the story. John has this giant hedge maze that he's created in his backyard, his interest in antique timekeeping. So John was kind of handing these literary tropes and metaphors that seemed rich to explore in that way, in the way you might in a novel. Also, Julie and I, just in terms of, you know, having made radio for a while, narrative radio, we were excited by the idea that of telling a story a little differently. So Julie and I were interested in the idea that when you read a novel, oftentimes you're just picking it up and you're just with a character who's doing something even mundane, possibly walking down the street. Or you might be in the middle of it and open a chapter and a new character is introduced just in the middle of their life. And there's no clear reason why or stated reason why you're meeting this character or watching them do the thing they're doing. But you know that it's a novel and that's how novels are. And you just trust that this author has a story for you. And we wanted to try and mimic that context with a podcast.
I think the thing about approaching this as a novel that challenged me at times is I recalled, not in tone at all, but only in topic, I thought of Truman Capote, I thought of In Cold Blood. And I thought of the idea of looking at a town of real people where a thing actually happened and somehow reading it under the construct of it being a story. Among other things, you described John as struggling with depression and struggling, I mean, sometimes with his sexuality. Did you worry at all about the ethics of reporting on someone who seemed vulnerable like that?
I mean, I thought about it, but also, it's a tough one. Would I deny John his own agency, who, you know, clearly has an incredibly powerful, interested, engaged mind? Like, would I say to him, oh, you don't have the, like, you can't decide to take part in this.
Right.
I didn't feel comfortable doing that either, you know? He wanted this story to happen and was very eager for me to report on his town and to come down there and talk to him. And so, like, I would feel just as weird ruling out the possibility of doing the story of someone like John. Like, who am I to decide that he can't decide to do this, to consent to the story, you know?
Yeah. I want to let you know right now, I'm speaking to Brian Reed, host and producer of the popular podcast S-Town. We're talking about his approach with the podcast and the idea of writing this in some ways like a novel. So if you haven't heard this show yet, you might want to, and you don't want to have it spoiled, you might want to like not tune in for the next like 3 or 4 minutes. Like if you're listening on the podcast, just skip ahead a little bit, because we're going to talk a little bit about a major development that happens pretty early in the story. So we're going to talk about it. We're not going to end by talking about it. So you can skip ahead by those 15-second buttons, and you should end up somewhere that makes sense to you. And then when you listen to it, you can go back to it. But Brian, now that disclaimer is out of the way, and I feel
thank
like—
Thank you. That was very graceful and well done. You're a real pro. That was awesome.
Oh, I really appreciate that. Yeah, I thought about the 15-second buttons, how often I use that, because I'm not paying attention to what's going on.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that.
At the end of the second chapter, we find out that John has committed suicide. And I think even in addressing what I just did, talking almost about it as a spoiler, yeah, I feel a certain discomfort as well, because it's a real thing that happened to a real man. At that point, did you doubt whether you should keep telling the story?
I mean, I certainly didn't know if I would. Mm-hmm. I was dealing with the shock of the news. I just wanted to go to the funeral, and I wasn't sure if it was for a story I would do or not.
Right.
But right around the time of the funeral, two very clear kind of threads of reporting presented themselves. The first was I just found myself having a lot of questions about John. You know, who was this man that I'd gotten to know, but who still was so interesting and clearly had, you know, so much more to him than I even understood at that point. He'd also left behind a list of people to contact who I pretty soon learned that had not been contacted for some reason. And then the other thing that was happening is Tyler Goodson, this local friend of John's, and his family were telling me that there was something nefarious going on in the wake of John's death, that there was an estate battle brewing and that John's wishes were not being carried out, and were contacting me about that. And so that's another very clear thing to report on. As a reporter, I can look at what's happening to Tyler and his family in the wake of John's suicide and look into if there is something weird going on with his assets and his estate.
I've read a lot of questions towards you in reading about this that have talked a little bit about your intentions and whether there were ethical dilemmas in writing about John at all after his death and disclosing personal things about him after his death. And I really appreciate what you've said on that, which is the idea that when you write a biography on someone, dead or alive, you do include information you got after their own death. However, I wanted to talk a little bit about something different, which is the idea mm-hmm. of how work like this is perceived and received. A story that's not about your podcast, but I remember when Serial first came out, and it was coming out every week towards the end. I think it was the finale of Serial. I got invited to a party on Facebook, mm-hmm. and it was a Serial finale party. And mm-hmm. I thought somehow that really, to me, I found that really hard because I found it really dehumanized the actual humans who were in the story. You know, the people who had died, the people who were being charged for murder, wrongly or otherwise. And I mm-hmm. felt like it turned an actual thing that caused pain for real humans. It took away empathy out of the situation and treated it like a bit of a whodunit or like an episode of Law and Order. And I wondered if that factored into the idea that this came out all at once, S-Town did, as opposed to being serialized week after week. Just what your thoughts are on how the audience can change the intention of your work.
I mean, that wasn't a main reason that we decided to release them all at once, but it's a byproduct of the decision that I'm very grateful for.
What do you mean?
There were other reasons we decided to release all at once. I mean, first, it was to try and give it this whole package as
right.
a novel. You know, there are things that are raised. You know, people in the story say things about other people in the story that I didn't want to have to have the person whose an allegation is being made against have to respond to it immediately. And so by releasing it all at once, it allowed, you know, kind of everyone to have their say in full, like throughout the entire thing rather
okay.
than immediately, if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
It does, yeah.
I don't know how much responsibility one bears when you make something and people take it a certain way. You bear some. I mean, I totally see why you would feel icky about that party. I get that. But I don't totally know. Like, I feel a little like defensive of my colleagues that they could have foreseen that. You know?
No, and
like
they're
reporting on something that's very important, and a conviction has been overturned as a result of it.
Oh, believe you me. You know? That's why I try to preface that question by saying that I it's not necessarily about your intentions in making it. It's when you release it, the control that you lose.
Yeah, you do lose. I guess you do lose control of it. I don't know. Yeah, I guess I don't like. I know I'm someone who doesn't really understand the internet that well. Like I feel very lucky that like my job is to kind of express my thoughts and pursue my interests in a public space in a very curated, you know, produced public venue. And so I don't feel the urge to weigh in on stories or to reinvestigate stories online. So it's a little hard for me to understand totally like going on Reddit and weighing in on a story. You know, that's not something that I personally do, but I totally get why people would want to do that.
But I think to get it back to S-Town, the way it became clear to me was when you hear in the early episodes some really hard stuff to listen to. At the beginning of chapter two in particular, you hear these racial slurs mm-hmm. from people in the tattoo parlor. And yeah, it was very hard for me to listen to. So when you put that out into the world, were you worried in your editing, were you worried in your reporting that people would jump to conclusions about what life there is like? Did you have to be very careful with that part?
Oh my gosh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to gloss over anything, but there was also more to these people than just their very bad racism. You know, it was both things are true at once, which is often the case in real life. And talking about the perceptions of something. This scene in the tattoo parlor has honestly been the most illuminating for me. Or at least it's been the, like, I'm still making sense of it, but in terms of the reaction, there have been several very clear reactions to it that have differed depending on people's backgrounds. So I've talked to certain people, white people in the North, New York area, who had very visceral, uncomfortable reactions to that scene. That said, when I talked to people from the South, unprompted, a number of them have brought up that scene was the most, they could relate to that scene so much. And even though it made them cringe, they had been in that situation many times. And They found it very real and relatable. And many of them have pointed out that quite the opposite of the people in that tattoo parlor not realizing they would be on the radio, that a thing that they've seen happen, a dynamic they've seen happen, and that I believe was happening in that case, is that people are kind of testing the outsider and, like, seeing how they'll react to this kind of language. And I believe that's part of what was going on, and that's certainly part of the dynamic. And then I have since heard from the guy in that tattoo parlor who makes some of the worst comments. He said he listened to it twice, and he loved the story and thought that the portrayal of him was fair. You know, he thought that I'd given air to two sides of him and that he was proud of who he was.
Brian, in listening to you talk about this, you know, you are as much as you describe yourself as not an internet person, which I can very much relate to in a lot of ways, I am at least aware that you are, I hate to use the word again, aware of the of some of the conversation around the podcast. I don't want to give, if you're listening to this, any kind of impression that this is a highly scrutinized show or a controversial show, but there have been, I cannot get over the number of think pieces that have been written analyzing every word and sentence and punctuation in this show, S-Town. So, Brian, how does it feel to have your work kind of picked apart and scrutinized like that?
I mean, I appreciate people listening and thinking about it. I mean, that means a lot, you know? I'm very grateful for that, you know? And there's some of the criticism I'm totally taking, some I just disagree with. And I totally appreciate, you know, smart, good criticism. But I wish, like, the media in general would do more reporting. Like, that's kind of my MO. I wish that, like, some of the horsepower at media organizations would put their writers and reporters into the world more.
Right, less analysis
and report
and
more. Like, I think
reporting.
The world would be, I would read more online, and I don't, personally, that's just my taste and what I wish would happen more than, you know, something written in a day about someone else's reporting, you know.
I have to ask, and you've been so generous with your time.
No, but I like your show, so I'm very glad to be here.
Oh, that's very kind of you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I have to ask, what do you think John B. McLemore, what do you think the man himself would have thought of the kind of debate that S-Town has stirred up? And you know he'd have an opinion on it. You know, what would he think that there is so much attention paid to his life right now?
I mean, I'm wary of putting myself inside of John B. McLemore's brain, just because it was such an interesting brain, and
yes,
it far beyond mine. And I think it's totally possible that he would be humbled, titillated, excited, honored. I also think he, you know, could be annoyed that, like, you know, he's being, you know, churned through a little bit of a pop culture think PC world, you know, but he likes stories, you know, but also just an incredible storyteller himself and appreciated a good yarn, you know, and I think that's the level I hope he would appreciate it on. All that said, I know that he also would be really disappointed that there's not more about climate change in the show. that's the one thing I feel confident in saying about how he would react.
Brian Reed, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thank you.
It's been a real
pleasure.
It's been a pleasure for me. Brian Reed is the host and co-producer of S-Town, which you can find on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.